This is Spectrum.
Alternative medicine. Homeopathy. Secret society. Hypnosis. The paranormal. Alternative energy. UFO. Abduction. The weird. The wild. And the wonderful.
With your hosts, Tom Theophanis and Scott Jordan.
Good evening and welcome to the Spectrum Radio Network on BBS Radio 2. This is Scott Jordan here, my co-host Tom Theophanis, and remember, there's no such thing as too much information. Hey Tom, how you doing, buddy?
Hey Scott, how are you?
I'm doing good. We're doing a flashback tonight, eh?
Yes, we are. We have a returning guest by popular demand, Mr. Craig Fairway. Craig started out when he was a young man playing the drums and playing songs. At an age of about 21, he wrote and performed the title track from an album dedicated to the Calgary Olympics in 1988. The song Dream on the Horizon, which we'll play later on, was featured in a CBC documentary and received regular airplay on FM radio stations across Canada. Motivated by high prices of commercial beer and his love for the beverage, Craig, at the age of 21 at the time, started experimenting with beer kits from his local home brewing shop. Well, 20 years later, he's still at it, and he now has a popular YouTube channel, which he has named CraigTube, and he has attracted thousands of followers, and I believe there's over 6,000 of them, maybe more than that now, which claim that they would have never started home brewing if it weren't for Craig. Craig also does a variety of other things on his YouTube channel, including cooking shows, music performances, philosophical talks with topics ranging from the paranormal to nature of the universe. But again, the main theme on his channel is still beer. So, Craig, how you doing?
I'm here. How are you guys?
Hey, welcome back, buddy.
Thank you for having me back. It's good to be back. That sounds like a song title. It's good to be back. Be back, be bop. No, I'm being silly.
It's all good.
Yeah.
Yeah, we got a big response from you on the last time. Apparently, there's a lot of people that like beer.
Yeah, and apparently there's a lot of people who like to make their own beer for one reason or another. And so I'm getting a lot of inbox questions every day, and it's just it's been great. It's
so
growing.
The theme of the show tonight is question and answer, because
yes,
you were telling me that your inbox is always full, and a lot of it is questions about, you know, details about making the beer, and you figured, well, I might as well answer them on the air and get it, you know, help out people that way. They can call in. The numbers are on our website. If you go to www.spectrumradionetwork.com, there's a big button in the top right-hand corner that says Listen Live. You can click that button. That'll take you to a page where you can listen to the show, and there's the phone numbers, the call-in numbers are all there. And just remember to turn down your volume.
Why don't we give the numbers over the air right now? Maybe that might help to some folks.
Awesome. That's a great idea.
Line 1 is 530-413-4511. Line 2 is 530-413-4520. Line 3 is 415-287-0074. And line B1 is 530-413-4515.
People
have time to write it.
And we need people, so please call in. We do need calls. Anything and everything you want to talk about regarding beer, if you just want to say something about your experience making beer, we would love to hear from you.
Yeah, we're just going to have fun tonight. Yeah. Tonight's a pretty laid-back night. We're just going to have fun.
They could all play a real, real horrible trick on me, and nobody call in, and then we'd have a real situation on our hands.
It's not like we're at a loss for words. I mean, we can talk endlessly. I'm going to go over. Tom, do you remember that? Do we have any more information on Carol Rainey? Carol Rainey just in case the listeners don't know, is the ex-wife of Bud Hopkins. And she's come out with an expose on the and Bud Hopkins is a well-known UFO abduction researcher, as well as David Jacobs. And they've done a lot of work. Maybe Tom will step in. He was the president of MUFON Ontario, so he knows a lot more about the story than I do. You just give us a quick rundown of what's going on there.
Well, I think the bottom line was that, you know, a lot of the folks that, you know, Bud and Mr. Jacobs was investigating, including some of the big name cases, have turned out to be not so great. Matter of fact, they turned out to be, you know, stories that were not real. And I think she, after, you know, a long time of viewing and listening and, you know, going through the experiences with these individuals and realizing what was going on.
She was taking the video. She was a videographer. Yeah.
She was a videographer.
She was just, and, you know, she was taping all this stuff. And, yeah.
Yeah, so she was right in the thick of things, and she knew exactly what was going on, and, you know, when, you know, things didn't seem right, and when she protested towards that, you know, she was told to not to worry about it and, I guess, be quiet or whatever. And eventually, I guess, she got fed up. And, you know, that may have caused part of the problem between them.
Yeah, I think there was another case that she had read about that was controversial. And she finally said, okay, that's enough. I'm going to come tell everybody what I know.
Well, I mean, the major cases that, you know, books were written about, like the Linda Cortile case, which was, you know, probably the most famous one. Back in the early 90s, you know, turned out to be a complete hoax. So therefore, you know, that even though it was sort of like very quietly done.
Yeah, it was quietly. The fact that it was a case was talked about in conferences all over the place. The fact that it became a hoax wasn't
and
talked
it became
about
a
anywhere.
Book.
the fact that it was a hoax wasn't talked about anywhere.
No.
So anyway, the gist of the story is, I've talked to Carol, and she's going to come on the show, and she's going to talk about her experiences, what she knows, and let some cats out of the bag. That should be interesting, you know? We're just reporters. We're here to report the information, and you decide whether it's true or not. Back to Craig, who is our guest. Craig, I want you to give a quick rundown of just in case for the new listeners out there, how you got into brewing, and just a quick rundown of the YouTube channel, how you started that, and then we'll take the calls.
Sure. Well, I know my parents used to brew beer when I was growing up, because beer prices, and again, there's different reasons why people decide to make their own beer. The reason why we decided to do it is because the price of beer where we live, and in other countries too, is quite high. It's taxed even before it gets onto the shelves. The government taxes it. And, you know, my dad left his old beer equipment, you know, unused, and he got a little older. He didn't want to do it anymore, and I started just using it and experimenting, and I got good results. Me and my father-in-law at the time did it together, and I just never stopped doing it. I've always enjoyed it, and, you know, it's just gone to the point now where a few years ago, I guess, what is it, 4 years ago now, I decided to throw up something on YouTube just as a joke, really, and wow, it took off. I never intended it to take off on YouTube, but it just... And it has, and so I've had to keep up with it, and I've had a lot of fun and learned a lot.
It started out as a what the hell thing. What the hell, I'll put this video up, see what happens.
Yeah, it was like my neighbor.
It was a beginner's version. It was like the easy way, right? It was homebrewing the easy way.
It's not even a great video, but the problem is that I can't take it down because it's all over the internet. I mean, it's websites, beer supply sites. They all have a lot of them have this video. There's four parts to it on their page, and it's kind of a doorway or an on ramp to the rest of my YouTube channel. Which since then I've tried to make better videos and give out as much accurate information as I can and step up the game as far as the method of brewing. So that people can see the different types of or ways that you can make beer and other beverages too.
Okay.
So it's just
what it's other just, beverages have you done?
Well, I got into somebody on YouTube who calls himself Murden2002. I'm not sure how you spell that, so I'm not going to try. But he taught me how to make. He lives down in Texas, and he taught me how to make. Like a hard apple cider or what he called an inmate or a prison brew because he used to be a prison guard. And so he saw the prisoners taking bread and orange juice or juices from the cafeteria and sugar and filling up the backs of their toilets with this stuff and fermenting it and making an alcoholic beverage, you know. So, of course, we don't do it that way when we do it here. But we still do use a very basic set of ingredients. And he showed me how to do that. And when I saw how easy it was to ferment just store-bought juice, I started doing my own videos on what I call inmate brew. Mm-hmm. And it's basically, and we should make sure that everybody knows here that I don't advocate underage drinking. Anybody could walk into a grocery store and buy three major ingredients and go home and make themselves an alcoholic beverage. And there's no age limitation there. So I just want to make sure that, I don't advocate underage drinking. And please do not make this stuff or drink it unless you're of drinking age. There's that out of the way. You basically can go to a supermarket and pick up, say, some apple juice. Some baker's yeast, like Fleischmann's or whatever, and a bag of sugar, maybe a couple cups of sugar. You mix that all together, and you put a cap on it. You put the cap on loose so that gases can escape, and it ferments. And again, as we talked about last time we were on, the yeast eats the sugars, converts them to carbon dioxide and alcohol. Carbon dioxide has to escape. That's why you leave the lid on loosely and the alcohol stays in the wine. So when all the sugar is eaten up, then you've got what's left, which is some of the juice. Well, you've got the juice minus the sugar and you've got the alcohol content. And this is something that you can do like on your kitchen counter in 10 minutes. And people didn't know this. And when you tell people this, they're like, what? No. You know, and you got to show them, look, I made some over here. This is inmate brew. It's not the creme, it's not table wine by any stretch of the imagination. The Italians would probably, kick you out of the house if you brought a bottle of this stuff in. But it's certainly not bad tasting and it's cheap.
Right.
If you're looking for, a nice drink, you can carbonate it the same way you carbonate beer. You can experiment with different flavors of juice. Sometimes you may have a failed batch because the juice doesn't ferment very well. But again, you're just experimenting. And when you find the type of juice that works, I know apple juice works really well. Then you can make it. You can flavor it with strawberries. You can do all kinds of stuff with it.
Okay.
So I've got videos on my YouTube channel showing how to do that.
Yeah, you've got videos. You've got a lot of your music videos there and you have a cooking show. I guess it's a cooking show. It could be considered a cooking show. Where you do all kinds of stuff. You did chicken wraps.
Oh, yeah.
I've seen that one. It was awesome.
Craig's Kitchen series. Trying to make, basic food, just nice tasting food. And I enjoy making videos on YouTube. I watched lots of cooking and how-to videos when I was growing up. So it's something I've always wanted to do. And now it's come to the point where I can do it.
You actually have an update since the last time you were on the show. You've started your own Friday night Justin TV show where you play music and answer questions and And
yeah, we have a good time in there. We have a good time. I go in and I've got a couple cameras here set up so you can watch me moving the buttons and sliders and things. We play some music from the 70s, 80s, 90s. And we have a chat room there. It's at justin.tv/CraigTube, all one word there. And there's a chat room in there. You can chat with the other people and ask questions about beer. And you can call in via Skype as well and ask me questions there. But I'm kind of hoping somebody's going to call in here.
Yeah, we got it. We have a caller.
Great.
We have Chicky on line one.
Chicky. I know Chicky. Hey, Chicky.
Hey, Craig. How are you? I just wanted to call in and say I'm listening to your show, and it's very informative.
Well, thanks for
calling. Having had the pleasure to actually interact with you and help you out when you broadcast on Justin TV, I wanted to say you really have an awesome show. And
thank you.
I'm really hoping that you get to show some of your viewers how you actually make the cider. I mean, I'm really interested in learning how to make it.
I could set up a table right in front of the camera, and I could get some apple juice and just do a batch up right there. It would only take a few minutes.
Yeah, that would be really great, because I know that I really would like to try it. It really would be something unique, rather than going to a supermarket and buying, like, Mott's apple juice or Johnny Appleseed or whatever, you know, store brand.
Yeah.
I'd like to, you know, learn how to do this for myself, actually.
Well, just for everyone who doesn't know, Chicky helped me set up. I didn't know she was calling in, by the way. I did not know. So it's a surprise to me, and it's a pleasure. She helped me set up my Justin TV channel, and so she's been a big help to me that way. So it's nice to hear from you.
Yeah, it's great hearing from you, and I'm glad I was able to call in and get through. I thought the lines would be really busy. And I just want to say, like, for everybody listening out there, I mean – the guy is really talented. He's multi-talented, and he's going to be a real success, I have to say. And it's a real pleasure to really be watching you and interacting with you. I'm learning a lot. I mean, as a matter of fact, I've been doing some research on home brewing myself, believe it or not, actually considering to do this, because honestly, beer is way too expensive after a while.
Yeah.
And for any girls out there who have never done it, it would be nice to meet other home brewers that are female that, you know, have done it. Have you had any females that have actually done this?
Yeah, there's a couple of females on YouTube. They've been in the chat. They've been in the Justin TV chat. One is B-Mare 44. The other one is Steel Jan. And they both homebrew, and they're both quite the it's funny to watch them do it, because I mean I'm not a chauvinist or anything like that, but you just always think of homebrewing as a male thing, you know, and there is a lot of testosterone there in some cases, so it's neat to see the chick.
I'm interested in kind of getting to get familiar with what's involved with the process. And I've been looking at the kits, actually, and kind of reading up on some of this. And, you know, I mean, I think you just need more of the space. I think the process itself is not that difficult. I just think it's the time element that's involved in actually doing this.
Well, one of the things that, you know, I looked into after I did the inmate brewing stuff was the wine kits. Now, the wine kits are dead easy. You know, it comes in a box. The box has a bag full of grape juice in it, and it's not just, you know, grape juice from the store. It's actual grape juice from vineyards. They've crushed the grapes. They've pasteurized the juice. They've put it in a bag. And then what you do is you got your fermenting bucket there, which you have to have whenever you're fermenting anything. And you just put the juice in there. You add water, and there's a couple of little packages that they give you, and you just add those packages when it tells you to add them, and it takes about a month. And at the end of that month, you have a wine of quality that you can take to a gathering and not tell anybody that you made this in your basement, and they would never know. In fact, it's better tasting wine than some of the stuff you buy at the store, and I know that for a fact because I've compared them. And so you're looking at about $2 to $3 a bottle for this good quality table wine.
That's
you can't
pretty inexpensive,
that.
Right? considering an average bottle is about $15-$20, if you know, and that's just that's a low end kind of wine compared to like a bottle normally that would be like $35, $45, $55 depending on the vintage and year, you know. But
yeah.
I'm definitely open to it, and I'm hoping that as I get, again, that you're going to be showing it on your channel, because there's a lot of people. I've been getting a lot of feedback from people, and a lot of people are interested in seeing some of this stuff actually happening right in front of their eyes. But I just wanted to say it's, you know, it's really a pleasure to interact with you, and, you know, you're really very informative, and also you have a great voice. I had to say that on the air. You have a great voice.
Well, thanks so much. Thank you.
Thanks for calling in, Chicky. It's
okay. Thanks again. I'll see you soon, Craig.
Yeah. Bye bye. Thank you.
Have a great day. Well, there you go. Your first call.
I didn't know. I know Chicky, but I didn't know she was going to call, and that was a surprise. Awesome.
That's good. Well, I mean, you could definitely expand on the Justin TV thing. Later on, I think what we're going to do too is we were talking earlier about maybe. Playing some of your music, because you are a musician, and you did write a song that was played in the, was it played on the album for the Olympics, or what was the story there?
Okay, well, if we just want to get away from the brewing just for a minute,
just for a second. I mean, you do all this stuff anyway, right?
Sure, I do. Yeah, the song was inspired by a call I received from an agency in Toronto who was doing an Olympic album. With all Canadian artists on it, including Leona Boyd, Rick Emmett from Triumph, Alex Lifeson from Rush, and other talents, and they were interested in having me write a song that would go on the album. And I already had a mental image of the phrase "Dream on the Horizon" in my head from just a few days before, when I was just sitting in the back of the car getting home from somewhere. And so when they asked me to do that, I gave it a shot. I went and I wrote the song in about 20 minutes, I guess. I had a song that I'd hoped they would like. When we drove to Toronto and took the song to them, I didn't get much of a reaction from them at the time, but I found out a few days later that they liked the song so much that they used it as the title track of the album that they were releasing, which was, you know, for me, it was a thrill. And so the song was on the album. The song was played on radio stations all across Canada and parts of England. It was played on the music stations on television, like Much Music. I'm not sure about MTV, but I know it was on Much Music because we also recorded a video for the song as well, which is on my YouTube channel if you want to check out the long hair and the mullet. And then the BBC was doing a documentary on the Olympics for television and decided they wanted to use the song in their documentary. And the documentary was called Dreams of Glory. And so they did use the song. And when we went to the screening to see the premiere of the documentary, when I start, you know, the first 5 minutes of the documentary, it's just, you know, whatever, yada, yada. And then all of a sudden, there's this young girl, and she's, you know, she's skating and putting on her skates and everything and getting ready to go and out and try to rehearse her routine. And on comes my song. And I can't explain the thrill that I felt back then. It was just, it was amazing. It was one of the most amazing times I can remember from that time. So the song is old now. I mean, it's an 80s ballad, right? Basically, but still it received a lot of airplay, and it was on, I know it was on every morning when my mom drove to work. She heard it on the radio every morning here. So
cool. That's a surreal sort of thing, isn't it?
Yeah, I think my parents were driving home from somewhere once, and there was a huge snowstorm, and they were stuck in a huge traffic jam. There was an accident, and they were sitting there. And all of a sudden, my song came on the radio, and it just lifted their spirits. And so that's kind of a cool story.
You know what? You got me in the mood for it now. You have another song, Losing My Head Over You, and a bunch of other songs on your YouTube channel.
Mm-hmm.
Why don't we just play one of them? Check it out.
Sure, if you want.
Let's go for it. Awesome. Okay.
Yep, that was, geez, that was written, oh, I don't know how many years ago, but it was, there's a video on my YouTube channel as well of that video. I did a little green screen stuff, and there's three of me actually in the video at the same time, which is kind of cool.
You did the background too, didn't you? You did all the music, you did most of the instruments and the background?
Well, in the song itself, I did all the instruments except there's some guitar in there that I had some help with. But all the rest of the stuff I did myself, the drums and the keyboards and all that. So,
good, good. See, you have a whole separate side of yourself. That's the music, Craig. And you have another part that's home brewing. Another part that's the cooking. And then you also have Craig Talk, where you just, you know, you talk about different subjects that's on your head. It, you know, it's great.
I try to keep busy. I consider myself, you know, I guess, a jack of all trades, master of none. You know, I have a lot of hobbies and so on that keep me busy. But, you know, all the questions I get in my inbox every day from home brewing, I'm really surprised they're not calling in and asking them.
That's okay. We've already had a call in. We can talk for hours. That's okay.
Hey, Craig.
Go through a detailed explanation of how to make that, you know, the inmate style wine if you want, or, you know, whatever.
Actually, Craig, I had a question talking about that homemade wine. Have you ever had anybody talk to you about doing anything with tea?
Tea?
Yes, fermenting tea.
No, I have not.
Have you ever heard of kombucha?
No, these are new to me.
New to you. Oh, okay.
You're embarrassed now.
No. I couldn't embarrass you. Well, kombucha is a it came from the northern Caucasus type of countries, like northern Russia and northern China. Mm-hmm. It's a process of fermenting black or green tea. Ultimately, the brew that it creates, or the taste of it, is very similar to cider, or kind of or bad wine, somewhere in that. So I would say similar to what you were talking about.
Well, kombucha has health benefits too. I mean,
of course. Then that's of course the purpose of
this. I think all drinks do, like wines and beers do. Don't you? Isn't that true?
Yeah. Oh yeah. No. Hey, it's all healthy.
It's all good.
It's all good. We have another caller. We have Mark on line one.
Hey, Mark.
Yes. Hi, Craig. How are you doing?
Fine. How are you, Mark?
I'm doing well. Thank you.
Thanks for
calling, Mark.
Hey,
thanks for calling. Do you have a question for Craig?
Yeah, I do, Craig. Well, I stumbled across your website a couple of weeks ago, and, you know, I spent a lot of time watching all your videos and really enjoyed, of course, all the brewing, the cooking, your camping, all that was great. Popped onto Justin TV last Friday, and, boy, it was pretty chaotic. I don't know how you keep up with all the messages coming on, but all those IM messages, but it was something else. But anyway, great program. But I do have a brewing question. I was exposed to all grain brewing about 10, 15 years ago with some friends, and mm-hmm. you know, as you're aware, it's a long process and a lot involved and a lot of equipment and all that. And you know, I started looking into brewing again, and stumbled across yours and saw the easy way of doing it, and it's really got me psyched up to get into it, because I just could not get into doing an all-grain brewing process, not with all the equipment and everything else involved. My question is I know that you have talked up the Cooper's kit on your website, and, you know, I have a couple brewery stores fairly close to here, and I popped in, and, you know, what I saw is, like, the Cooper's kit, you know, they have the one large container that has the built-in spigot and the screw lid. But then I've seen kits with, you know, two plastic buckets. So you have one for fermenting, one for with a spigot for bottling. And then I've seen with, you know, three, which would be, you know, with those two plastic buckets and then also a glass carboy. And I'm kind of lost with all those. I will probably get involved in doing maybe partial extracts like you just showed recently. That'd probably be the extent I would go. I don't think I'd ever get into doing all grain, but I would consider doing that. So kind of wanted your feedback or your input on, you know, the single bucket versus two plastics versus the two plastics in the glass carboy.
Okay. Okay, yeah. There's different people are going to say different things on this, but really I think for the most part, you can do it with a single bucket. The concern some people have with this, and see what happens is when you make your beer and you put the lid on in the airlock and you ferment the beer, at the end of the fermentation, all the yeast settles down to the bottom of the fermenter and lays on the bottom. And so, the concern is that when you put the when you transfer the beer from the fermenter straight into the bottles using the little spigot that's on the bottom there, the concern is that you get sediment in your bottles, and you don't. I don't. The spigot is positioned in such a way that it's just above the layer of sediment that's there. So even if you get some sediment in maybe the first bottle of beer that you bottle, it will settle to the bottom of the bottle anyway, and you won't end up with it in your glass. Now, there are some people like to do what's called a dual stage fermentation, and that is that they let the initial fermentation go for a week, or you know, somewhere around a week maybe, 10 days, let's say, and then they siphon it out of that container into a carboy. And then they let it sort of age or ferment in there for another couple of weeks, maybe, or week or two, depending on, you know, what they want. And then they might siphon it from there into a third bucket, which is called a bottling bucket, and that bucket would have the spigot on it. Okay? Now, there's different people that have different reasons for doing that. Some people believe in getting the beer off of the sediment as quickly as possible. Some people say that the sediment actually helps to clean up the beer because the yeast starts to eat its own waste. I, for one, don't see a huge reason why you need all those fermenters and the carboys. I personally brew with one fermenter with the spigot, so I basically brew in my bottling bucket. And I've been known to leave the beer in there for 2 weeks, untouched, unaltered. Just leave it there, let it ferment, don't touch it, let it do its thing. And then when it's done after 2 weeks, bottle it right out of that bottling spigot. And I've had absolutely no problems doing that. And I've made some really nice beer that way. Other people may have other reasons for doing the, you know, the multi-stage things, but at the most part, in the beginning, I wouldn't worry about it. I would just do it the simple, easy way. And then later on, if you find that you want to age your beer a little longer in a carboy before you bottle it to get some of the sediment out and maybe clear it up a little bit more, or maybe you get yourself into kegging and you want your beer to go into the keg clear so that you can carbonate it and drink it immediately, you might want to put it into a carboy and age it for a couple of weeks for that reason. And the thing about a carboy is that you can see through it for the most part. They're glass or they're see-through, so you can see the beer. And a lot of people actually ferment their beer in the carboy to begin with. They don't like plastic and things like that. So, man, there's a lot of areas you can go to. My advice to you would be just to buy the simple kit. That Cooper's kit's actually quite effective for people starting out. You can make excellent beer with it, and you can reuse the equipment there. If you do want to expand someday, get a carboy or another, a second bucket or whatnot, then you can still use that kit. And if you do get into the, you know, the multi-stage thing, that carboy, the bucket that comes with that Cooper's kit makes a great bottling bucket because it's got the spigot and it works great. Well, does that help clear everything up a little bit?
Yeah, it does. And then I know, like in your earlier videos, you had, you know, the standard bucket with the spigot on it, but you know, the Cooper's has that screw-on lid one. Now,
yeah.
Now you've used both of them because I've seen them in your video. Would you prefer one over the other? Do you find one easier to work with or cleaning, or is there any difference between the two at all?
The Cooper's bucket has a little more space, a little more headroom in there, so that if your beer goes, you know, goes crazy and really ferments, a lot of times what happens with beer is, and in fact, usually what happens is that when the beer ferments for the first 3 days, it creates a lot of foam on top. And sometimes that foam can come out through the airlock, even if it gets up to the top of the fermenter. Now with the Cooper's bucket, I noticed that there's a lot more room up top there, and so there's less chance of it getting out through your airlock. The thing you have to be careful with the Cooper's bucket is if you tighten on that lid too tight, you know, if you turn, you know, it screws on as you saw. If you hulk out on that thing, you may have a hard time getting it off in the end, so you don't need to screw it on very tight. Also, some people are having are worried about, you know, the fact that maybe it doesn't have a perfect seal, and their airlock isn't responding the way they think it should. That doesn't matter. The airlock is basically really not necessary. It's a nice feedback, you know. You can see it bubbling and so forth, and you can walk in and, oh, look, it's still going, you know, that kind of thing. But if your airlock isn't going, it doesn't mean your beer is not working. Now, you know, I like, there's different reasons why I like the Cooper's bucket, and there's different reasons why I like the standard bucket. The standard bucket is actually a little easier to clean because there's less curves and crevices and things like that inside. I wouldn't base your kit decision on the fermenter itself. I mean, if you like the Cooper's kit, it comes with the fermenter and all the other, the bottles and the hydrometer and all the other stuff it comes with in the booklet, then, you know, go ahead with that. Or if you want to piece it together yourself and buy a separate fermenter with the snap-on lid and buy it all separately, then, you know, that's really up to you. I can't tell you which one's better because I've never really had an opinion. Right. And I think that Cooper's is I think they're ready to upgrade their fermenter too. I'm not sure what it's going to look like, but I think they're getting ready to bring something new out. That's just kind of something I heard. But I always recommend the Cooper's microbrew kit. I tried it a couple years ago, and I had success with it. I still use it. I did get my lid stuck on once, and I couldn't get it off. So I actually damaged the lid trying to get the lid off. So now I have to get a new lid for it. But so just be careful with the lid. Don't glue it on. It'll be it's not easy to get off if you tighten it down too tight. Whatever beginner kit seems comfortable for you. But no, I don't have anything against any of the fermenters I've used.
Okay. Way back when I did it, I did it two ways, or actually my friends did. One, you know, they did it with the keg, which was awesome, but, you know, there's a big expense there. And then the other one was doing just your traditional glass bottles with the bottler, you know, capping on those, the caps, and that was a pain. I see that the Cooper's has a little bit larger bottles, and they have screw-on lids. Did you find that those bottles and the screw-on lids were by far easier to deal with than the glass ones and then capping them with the metal caps? Or was there not a big difference in doing the two?
Well, I switched to those PET plastic bottles years ago just for that reason,
did,
I hated capping my beers. And again, you're getting into an area where you're talking about glass versus plastic here. And there's a lot of people who advocate glass, and there's a lot of people who advocate plastic. The thing about glass is that it's rigid. It won't stretch or expand, which is a good thing in one sense and a bad thing in another sense. It's good because you won't lose any carbonation with your beer. And if you put the right amount of priming sugar in each bottle, you'll get the same amount of carbonation in each bottle. And that's another thing I should quickly mention. One of the ways of priming your bottles is actually not putting the sugar into each bottle. Now, I should just back up for a second. The way to get carbonation in your beer, one of the ways, is to allow the beer to ferment just a little bit inside of a sealed vessel, which is the bottle. And when it does that, the carbon dioxide that's created can't go anywhere else. So it forces itself into the beer, and that's how you get your foam. That's how you get your carbonation.
Right.
This is what we talk about when we talk about priming the bottles, is what you put a little bit of sugar in each bottle, and the beer will ferment that sugar and create the carbon dioxide. Now, you can also, if you do want to buy the second bucket, in other words, you buy your initial bucket and you buy a bottling bucket, what you can do, and a lot of people do this, is instead of putting the sugar in each bottle, they boil the sugar in about a cup of water or two cups of water. They boil the entire amount of sugar that they're going to need to prime the entire batch of beer. And I think it ends up being about 3/4 of a cup of sugar. And they boil that to sterilize it. They let it cool, and then they pour it into their secondary fermenter, and they siphon their beer into that. Now your beer is all primed and ready to bottle, and you don't have to put the sugar in each bottle. You understand what I mean? It's called batch priming. You still there?
Videos where instead of dumping a little bit of a sugar in there, the priming sugar, get the yeast going again. that you talked about. You're able to do it the full batch of beer. So, it makes total sense.
I've done both. Okay. I've done both, and for me, the time it takes to siphon the beer from one container into the other and boil the sugar and add it in there, you could have had your bottles all primed. Now, you will get a more consistent carbonation across the batch if you do the batch prime process, because each bottle of beer has the exact same amount of sugar in it. But if you're careful, you can prime the bottles and get a fairly consistent thing. Now, back to the screw-on caps, I have used plastic bottles for many years. The thing about glass bottles is if you put a little too much priming sugar in, the bottles will explode. And I've had that happen. And you've got beer all over the place and broken glass all over the place. The plastic bottles will not explode. They will expand. They're made to withstand the pressure of that. And they will actually expand a little bit to compensate for it. So I would say if you want to prime your bottles separately, like prime each bottle, maybe you can use the plastic. But if you're using the glass bottles, you kind of have to be a little more careful how much sugar you're putting in. If you put too much in one bottle, you might get a beer bomb. Other people might also mention to you that the plastic bottles are slightly porous. And if you're storing the beer for an extended period of time, like 6 months or a year, that you may actually lose some carbonation through the pores in the plastic. I've never had that happen, but that's what some people, some people are concerned about that.
Well, that's what they get for storing beer for a year and not drinking it.
Yeah, it never hangs around here that long.
I would hope not.
I did find the plastic bottles much easier. I did find them much easier. And if you use the carbonation drops that Cooper's has, and other companies have them too, but I've only used the Cooper's ones, the carbonation drops, you drop one or two in each of their bottles, and they'll tell you how many. I think if it's a 500 milliliter bottles, you use two in each bottle. And you just drop them in. Boom, 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 boom. Easy as pie. Fill your beer, your bottle up. Put the cap on, give it a little shake, and you're done. So that's the next easiest way. If you're going to bottle, that's pretty much the least of the aggravating ways of doing it. Kegging, of course, is awesome. It's, you won't go back to bottling very often and if you're going to keg. Now, the other thing I want to mention.
Are you kegging right now?
Yes, I am.
Okay.
Yeah. You also might, if you want to bottle, if you like the idea of having bottles that you can stick in the fridge, because kegs require somewhere cold for you to store them. Otherwise, you're dispensing warm beer. If you don't have a big fridge or a freezer that you convert into a kegerator, then you've got a problem with, serving warm beer. And now my kegs are in the basement, so I don't have too much of a problem with that. And I have a freezer down here. If you do want a bottle and you like the idea of throwing some bottles of beer in a cooler and going somewhere, look for those flip-top bottles. They're glass flip top, and the tops are right on the bottle. The kind that you use your thumbs and you kind of pop them, and the lid comes off, but it stays hinged on the bottle. Have you ever seen those?
Yeah, like the old Grosch bottles. Yep.
Yeah, I like those, and I might get myself some of those, because when I do my lagers, I want the beer to age for 3 months, and I don't want to tie up a keg for that long. So that's when I would use these nice flip top bottles. They're great bottles.
Okay, I've seen those, and that does look like a great idea as well. Now, because you're really frugal on doing things, and I'm sure that you probably have a good idea, where's a good way to pick up a kegging system if you're going to do it, that you can, get one that you're not buying brand new that's costing an arm and a leg? Are there certain places to look for them? Because they look like they're old Pepsi dispensers or soda dispensers looking at them.
Yeah, they are the ball lock. There's two types, ball lock and pin lock. One is from Pepsi and one is from Coke. I can never remember which is which. But it is a difference between how the valves snap onto the hoses that you use to put the gas in and the dispense the beer. Now, I was lucky. I got my kegs for next to nothing. My local homebrew supplier, somebody brought them in, and he was selling them, and nobody was buying them, and he just said, $50, here you go, take the whole thing, and I've got like five things here. As far as where you'd get them, I can't. I don't know.
Okay.
I've never had to do that research. Maybe eBay or something. I'm actually not sure.
Okay. And one last question. I remember way back when we were doing the all-grain brewing with the friends of mine, and they used that copper wort cooler or chiller.
Yeah.
Now, I haven't seen you do that. Is it something necessary, or why? You know, why do you need to cool it down that fast versus let it cooling down on its own?
Well, once your wort, when you boil your wort, which is if you're making a partial extract brew, then you have to boil it because you're boiling your grains, you know, that you're putting in there, your specialty grains, and you're doing boiling them, you're steeping your grains, and then you're boiling your hops. If you're doing a beer kit, you don't have to boil anything because the hops and everything have already been boiled in the can. And I mean, the manufacturer has made the wort for you, added the hops to it, boiled it, and then they centrifuge it or evaporate it down into a syrup. And it's basically a hopped malt extract. Now, all you have to do is add that to some hot water, boiled water, maybe a gallon of boiled water, and put your fermentable, your dextrose, your dry malt extract in, stir that around, and add your top-up water. Now, in that particular case, you don't need to cool the wort because you've only got a gallon of wort there, of hot wort, and by the time you add your cold top-up water, it's going to be at the proper temperature. But when you're doing a 3-4-gallon boil where you're doing, say you're doing an all-grain batch, where you're doing a 5-6-gallon boil, or you're doing a partial extract where you've got 2 or 3 gallons there that you've boiled your hops in, then you may have to find another technique, because if you put that in your fermenter and top it up with cold water, it's not going to come down to the proper temperature. Now, the reason you have to cool your wort quickly is because once it gets down below a certain temperature, it can get infected. So it starts out nice and hot, but if you just let it sit there and cool all by itself, that could take an hour and a half, and in that time, there could get some bugs in there. So I would say if you're doing a 4-6-gallon boil, like an all-grain person would do, the wort chiller is kind of necessary because it's the fastest way to cool down your wort. If you're doing a partial extract where you only have, say, 2 to 3 gallons of hot wort, then you can just put it in a sink full of an ice bath, a sink full of cold water, like I did, yeah, and stir it up a bit, and that gets it down. You don't need to cool that down all the way because you're going to be adding cold water to top it up. But
Okay.
I usually just cool mine down until the steam disappears.
Okay. That makes a lot of sense then. Okay. All right. Well,
thanks for calling in, Mark.
Thanks for taking the long time talking to me. I really appreciate it. And I really enjoyed, all your different videos and all that, your music and everything. So keep it up. You keep us really entertained, and I love it. So
thanks, Mark.
Of us do, so.
Thanks for all your questions. Those were great questions.
Actually, Mark.
Okay, well,
brilliant question.
I appreciate it.
Take care, Mark.
Right,
thanks.
Take care. Bye.
Bye.
It doesn't take much to get you talking for 15 minutes, does it, Craig?
I have to cover all the bases. I mean, I've got my methods, but those aren't the only methods out there. People have different ways of doing things, and I think it's up to the individual which way is best for them. And so they should try and experiment with the different methods. They can try my way of doing it, then they can try other ways of doing it to see what's best for them.
Okay, well, remember to call in. If you go to our site, www.spectrumradionetwork.com, you can click on the large blue button in the top right-hand corner. It says Listen Live, and there'll be all the call-in numbers are on the page, as well as the various buttons you can use to listen to the show. You can also listen to the show on bbsradio.com under Spectrum Radio Network. There, they have all the buttons. You can listen to the show on Station 2. But right now, we're going to go for a break, and we'll catch you guys on the other side.
Are you suffering from constant pain in the knee, shoulder, wrist, and other parts of your body? Needle-free acupuncture with Lapingo Life Pads may be the answer. Lapingo Life Pads combine ancient wisdom with modern nanotechnology and advanced engineering. They're designed to relieve pain naturally with no needles and no side effects. That's L-E-P-I-N-G-O, lepingoproducts.com.
You've always been told to think about the alternative. Well, we can do better. We can show you. AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com will improve your health, well-being, and lifestyle through hundreds of different products, from herbs and well-being products to our large selection of specialty clothing, jewelry, and more. We ship around the world with a 100% satisfaction guarantee. There's always new products and amazing specials. Let us show you at AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com.
And we're back. Okay, I think Tom has a question for you. Tom, go ahead.
Yes, I do. So, Greg, I was always curious about green beer that they serve for St. Patrick's Day.
I'm pretty sure that's just food coloring. Because beer is made of barley, and barley is brown. I mean, it's, you know, it's not green.
See, so, he was all worked up for a really long answer.
Yeah,
there. It's like nah,
I thought there was something special to it.
No,
that's food coloring.
Unless they're brewing grass or something, I don't see how it could be green unless they're just. And I've done that myself. It's just my best guess is just food coloring. I can't understand how they could get green beer out of ingredients that aren't green.
Yeah, you know what I wanted to ask you about. I remember you mentioned once in one of your videos the importance of sanitization in the process of brewing.
Okay.
Could you dig down a little bit on that?
Sure. Absolutely. First of all, when you're making any kind of an alcoholic beverage where you're allowing fermentation to occur, fermentation is something that happens naturally in your fridge, in your garbage, in your compost, in your garden. Things are always fermenting, and bacteria is feeding on it and converting it and breaking it down. Now, when you make beer or wine or anything like that, you don't want all the airborne bacteria to be doing the fermenting. You only want to infect your batch of beer with the one organism, and that's the yeast that you put in yourself. So you're doing a controlled fermentation where the only thing that's going to allow the fermentation is the microbe that you put in, which is the yeast. All the other microbes have been killed ahead of time. So that's why, and if you don't do that, you'll end up with either vinegar or really, really rotten tasting beer. And so now sanitation is, so that's why it's so important. There's a few different ways of doing it. I know my dad used to just pour boiling water down the sides of the fermenter, before he put in his wort and topped it up with water. And I've done that, and it seemed to work okay. Not very popular method these days, and especially because a lot of people use glass carboys. You don't want to be pouring boiling water into one of those because it could break. So there's some different products out there that you can use. The most basic one is bleach. I mean, you can just take, say, a half a cup of regular household bleach and fill it with 5 gallons of water, fill up your fermenter and let it soak for 15, 20 minutes, half an hour, whatever. But that has to be rinsed off, and it has to be rinsed off quite vigorously. And as you know, bleach can be slippery and it doesn't come off very easily. So I would do that as a last resort if you have nothing else. Some of the products that are available are Star San. Star San is probably one of my favorites. It's a non-rinse sanitizer. What you do is you take a few ounces of it, you mix it with a gallon of water, and then you expose it to all of the equipment that's going to touch your beer. And it basically, as long as it's in contact with all the equipment that's going to touch your beer for at least 30 seconds, then it's sanitized, and then you can pour it back into its container, and basically your equipment is sanitized. You don't have to rinse it off. It won't hurt your equipment. It won't hurt your beer. As a matter of fact, it does create some foam, which is good for your yeast, so I wouldn't worry about the foam that it creates. The other one is iodophore. I-O-D, I don't know how to spell it. It's just try to look for homebrewing iodophore on YouTube or Google, and I think you'll find it. It's a Again, it's a non-rinse sanitizer, which is iodine-based, I believe. It has a darker color to it. You just, again, you expose it to your equipment, and everything that's going to touch your beer has to be sanitized. Everything. Including your hands. You know, you want to make sure your hands are clean if you're going to be touching the spoon that's going to touch your beer and that kind of thing. Those two are both contact sanitizers. You just, again, you rub them onto your equipment with a sponge or a cloth, or you splash them on with your hands. Make sure they stay in contact with it for a number of seconds, and then you're good to go. The one that I often use is a little less popular, used more in the wine world, is sodium metabisulfite. That is a contact sanitizer that does have to be rinsed off, but it's very, very soluble. It rinses off very, very clean. The reason I like it is because it sanitizes on contact. As soon as it touches anything, it kills everything. Now, as far as rinsing it off goes, if your water that you use that comes out of your tap is good enough to make beer with, then it's good enough to rinse off your equipment. Some people are a little concerned that if you rinse off your sanitizer, you're just reinfecting all your equipment with the water, which has bacteria in it. Well, our tap water has a small amount of chlorine in it, not really enough to affect the taste of the beer, but enough that the water is pretty much bacteria-free. So, you know, I use sodium metabisulfite quite frequently, and I rinse it off. And I don't have any problems. The reason why you have to rinse it off, by the way, is because it could kill your yeast. It is a microbe killer, so it works differently than the other two products.
Okay. Well, we have another caller coming in line two, Steel Dan.
Okay.
From Austin, Texas.
Steel Jan.
Steel Dan.
Steel Dan, hello.
Can you hear me all right?
I can hear you, Steel Jan.
Good, good. Hey, it's great to see you here on this radio show. That's you're doing a great job and everything.
Thanks.
I guess I better ask you a question because you're answering questions. I've been helping a guy over on YouTube that he's been trying to get a hold of several of us, I guess, and he's just made a Cooper's kit last week. And so I was answering his questions, helping him along. And then he wrote me a note and said, I just bottled all my beers, and I got a hold of a bunch of glass bottles, so I bottled them in glass bottles. I'm so tickled. And he said, but I had trouble when I put the sugar in. It foamed over. And he said, I didn't know what to do, so I had to run to the store and get some Cooper's drops, sugar drops. And I told him, well, and so I answered him, and I said, well, wait a second. Number one, I've never bottled before. When I started making beer, I went straight to kegs. Mm-hmm. So you need to get a hold of one of the guys who bottles, you or one of the other guys that the bottles, and get that question answered about foaming with the sugar. But I told him, but wait a minute. You've been writing me only since like last week. You just put this beer up like 5 days ago, and now you just bottled it in glass bottles. And I said, I think your fermentation couldn't possibly have been done yet. So you might want to put those glass bottles somewhere where if they explode, they're not going to do any damage. But you do need to get a hold of one of the guys who bottles or has bottled like you. And get that cleared up about the foaming question. I suspect it may have been that your fermentation wasn't finished yet, but I don't know.
That's possible.
So anyway, there's your question, and again, it's great to see you on the radio.
Yeah, thanks, Steel Jan, and you've been great. That's actually the first time I talked to Steel Jan. She's an old YouTube friend. Thank you for calling in.
Yeah.
You can hang on the line if you want. There's a couple of issues, first of all. When you bottle your beer, you add the sugar to the bottle first, then you put the beer in. If you do it the other way around, you will get a hell of a volcano effect. So that might be something that one thing that you might want to find out from him is which order is he putting it into the bottles. The other thing is, after 5 days, even if the beer is finished fermenting, there's a lot of trapped carbonation inside the beer. And when you, especially when you put it into the bottles, you could be agitating that carbonation and causing basically causing, you know, head on the beer as you're putting it into the bottles. And then when you put your sugar in there afterwards, you're really going to get – and I've had that happen where I've put a bottle of beer and thought, oh, shoot, I forgot to put the priming sugar in. So there's me adding priming sugar through a little funnel and getting beer all over the place. Yeah, that does happen. So beer – sugar first, then beer. And if you're bottling, it's a good idea to leave it longer than 5 days because you will allow the gases to escape out of the beer so that when you're pouring it into the bottles, it's not creating a whole bunch of foam.
Yeah, I wrote him that the minimum I have ever kegged a beer is 2 weeks, and that was bare minimum. And I try to let it go 3-4 weeks maybe. But 5 days, no. And I also ask him, you know, did you check with your hydrometer? Was fermentation even finished? And I haven't heard back from him yet on that.
Yeah. Well, you know, when you buy that Cooper's Micro Brew Kit, it does say somewhere in there that within 3 to 5 days you can bottle. Now, I would definitely you know, even if you had one hell of a fermentation and it is done in that amount of time, you still want the beer to clear a little bit more, and and you want the yeasts to sink down to the bottom, most of them anyway. That's an issue that I have though with bottling beer that's been sitting in a carboy for 4 weeks, is that there's hardly any yeast left in the beer. It's all sunk down to the bottom, and then when you bottle it and you try to carbonate it in the bottle, it takes forever because there's hardly any yeast there to ferment the sugar that you put in the bottle. That's my experience. But, you know, you've been kegging the whole time, so that wasn't a concern for you. When we keg, of course, we force carbonate the beer. So we don't need the yeast anymore. We just force it in with, you know, high pressure. So, man, there's lots of different things that can go on when you're bottling, and I've had those foamy things happen, and but definitely 10 days, 2 weeks, before you bottle, my rule of thumb was basically anywhere between 8 and 10 days, because it will continue to do what it's doing in the bottles, you know, whatever it's doing in the fermenter. It will just continue that process in the bottles. And what I've found is that the earlier you bottle it, the longer it has to sit in the bottles. So you're not going to get beer sooner by bottling it sooner. You still have to let it age the same amount of time, no matter where it sits. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah. Yeah. Since I've never bottled, I just didn't know, but, to me, glass bottles with fermentation that's not finished and adding sugar to me spells bomb. It just sounds like bomb to me.
Yeah, it definitely could. You could. I came home from a vacation once because I had to, you know, bottled it early because, you know, we were going away, and I came home and at least half the batch the bottles were broken and there was beer all over the floor. So yeah, you have to be careful, especially with glass bottles, because they won't give. They'll just break. That's all there is to it. So you're right. You're right to think that.
Yeah. Thank God for stainless steel kegs.
Yeah, kegging is the deal. It is absolutely the deal.
And you've just recently gotten into the kegging, within the last year, and now you're in love with it.
Yep. I always thought, nah, I don't want a keg. It's too complicated, you know. But I got the kegs for so cheap, and I saw other people on YouTube doing it. Steel Jen is one of the people who, in fact, and since she's called in, I want to say that if you are on YouTube, check out Steel Jen's channel. She's got wonderful videos. STEELJAN, great home brewer. Lots of fun videos on her channel. The kegging process seemed daunting to me at first, but once I looked into it, and I had a lot of help from YouTubers myself, with the process. But now, yeah, it's so easy. You ferment your beer for 10 days, 2 weeks, or whatever it is. You siphon it into your keg. You seal it off. You pressurize it for a couple of days with 30 pounds or whatever. You stick it in a cool place. And the way I do it is I pressurize it with 35 pounds and I shake it for 5 or 10 minutes. And I've got beer, carbonated and all. So it's really good. Now the beer is a little green. It's a little young. but that's why you let it sit in the fermenter for 2 weeks and then put it in the keg. That way you've got, you know, more or less fairly mature beer in there.
Great. Okay.
Yeah,
well,
I leave mine in the fermenter till it falls clear. Then
yeah.
I keg it. Okay, well,
thanks
I'll
for calling in.
I have to taste one of your beers one day, Steel Jan.
Yeah, I need to do that. Same.
Great.
Have a good evening, guys.
Thanks
okay.
a lot.
Okay.
Thanks again.
Thanks for calling in. Wow. Okay, so I got another question. Now, this one was just sent in. Somebody doesn't want to – they don't want to talk on the air. But
okay.
there is – we're going to do this question, then we'll do another song. And that'll be fun. Okay, is yeast important? And just how important is good yeast to flavor and quality? That was from Jill in Vermont.
Yeah, yeast is a whole other – can be a whole other subject. Yes, of course. It's the yeast that's really turning this thing into beer. It's basically the center of the whole process. It's what's taking the sugars and converting the sugars into alcohol and carbon dioxide. Poor quality yeast, whatever that would be. I mean, I don't know. If you just went to a health food store and bought a big bag of brewer's yeast, maybe, you know, I don't know how good that would be. It won't do the conversion process as efficiently, and it may leave behind some off flavors. So yeah, it is very important. Now, another thing that's really important when we're talking about yeast is fermentation temperature. And a lot of us, even me, a few years ago, were doing this at, you know, 80 degrees Fahrenheit, you know. You really, you know, if you push your yeast, I mean, think of, you know, you going to McDonald's and let's say McDonald's is the really crappy type of yeast you can buy, okay? And then you go there and you wolf down two Big Macs, a whole thing of fries, you eat it all real quick and then you leave. You go home and what do you feel like? You feel like crap, right? And so what you're doing is you're rushing the process at a temperature that's not comfortable for the yeast. And if you do that, you will have off flavors because the yeast is trying its hardest to do its job. It's not doing it properly and you're going to get some weirdness in there. So fermentation temperature is probably even more important, I think, than the quality of the yeast. But again, I've never really ran into a poor quality yeast. Fermented around 70, anywhere from 60 to 70 degrees, but first and foremost, I think follow the instructions that comes with your yeast because different yeasts are comfortable at different temperatures.
Okay, sounds good. That's a good answer. what I want to do now is we're going to do another song by Craig Faraway called After All. You remember that song, Craig?
I remember that song very well. That's an old one. It's an old one. That one's from 1989. So picture
really?
Picture the mullet and the dark glasses and all that stuff.
All right, let's do it.
Something tells me we could start a
Thank you. Wow, that was awesome.
Thank you.
Multi-talented. He can make beer and he can sing. It's great stuff, though. I mean, it's really good. That anybody wants to still call in, we got a few minutes left. If you want to call in, get a question in.
I also want to mention, I have a whole spiel that I won't go into right now about the music industry and music itself, but my music is free. It's free for download at craigfaraway.com. I'll just quickly spell it, craigfaraway.com you go to the section where my music is. And, I encourage people to download it. It's all copy protected, it's copyrighted, so there's no fear of somebody stealing it. I just want to get it out there and so people can enjoy it. It is a little bit dated, but hey, you know, that's when I was making it. It was back in the late 80s, early 90s, so...
Well, music stopped being good after the 90s.
Well, I didn't want to go into that, but you're absolutely right. There's still some good music out there, but the industry has that's a whole other topic. The industry, I don't know what's happened, but we certainly don't have the Led Zeppelins, the Supertramps, the Meatloafs, and the groups like that, the Beatles and things like that that we had of yesterday. We don't have those today, and I can't even name a current artist or pop or, musical act right now today that I think will be around in 5 to 10 years as opposed to, like, let's say the Beatles, let's see, Supertramp, Rush, Led Zeppelin. I mean, I could name, dozens and dozens and dozens of groups that aren't even together anymore. And still their music is still being played all over the radio. Well, all over the, good radio stations anyway, play them. What artist is out there today that you can say that about? I don't know. But I digress. Yeah.
Well, I mean, that's the thing. Maybe we're just old and we don't get the new music, but, I think that's... music just, that's probably part of it. But even from an artistic point of view, you have to come at this because you're an artist, you have to come at it from that point of view. And, seemed to have more soul in the 80s and 90s.
That's absolutely right. And, I know the syndrome. I mean, our parents, they were listening to Lawrence Welk and Engelbert Humperdinck and all those guys and all the big band music and all that stuff that, I don't really know a lot of the names. And then here we came along and we were the Beatles and Led Zeppelin and the Doors and all this rock music that our parents absolutely hated. But that's the syndrome of, well, we just got too old and, we don't like your new music. It doesn't mean that that new music wasn't good. And I mean, when I go back and listen to some Led Zeppelin, even today, it's phenomenal music. And not just because I grew up with it, but also because the drummer, okay, John Bonham, one of the best drummers in the world, the guitarist, Jimmy Page, I mean, I could go on and on and on. Those weren't, they weren't Walmart musicians. They were real deal. And then the next generation came around, the 80s and so on. And again, a lot of great, great music. Look at all the great ballads, like groups like Foreigner, groups like Toto. Those weren't jokes. Those were real musicians. And so, now what we've got now is, some guy with a four-track and a drum machine sitting, and all that,
I hear you.
Stuff, and then they steal stuff from the older, and they're actually redoing all the older songs in their style because they can't come up with their own music. Now, I shouldn't generalize here. There's some great talent out there, and even in the rap community and the hip hop community, but for the most part, I think we're at our lowest point thus far in the industry right now in regard to music.
Right. And even going back, going way back, there's some old stuff that's just truly phenomenal. There's some singers back from the 50s. What was that one? Rag. When they used to do the, what was it called? Scatting.
Oh, I don't know. I'm more thinking of the Mozarts and the guy that's blind, or sorry, not blind, deaf. and he's writing Beethoven. Beethoven was deaf, and he wrote Beethoven's Fifth Symphony.
Right, right, right. It was all in his head.
What are you doing? Yeah, exactly. Now, if you don't think that's talent, I mean, you've got Stevie Wonder, you know. You've got Jeff Healey, for Pete's sake. The guy plays the guitar upside down and backwards. I mean, these are guys that really have talent. I don't know where Jeff Healey is these days, but maybe he, you know, these days, where is that? And then the group called the Keane Brothers, who did a song called Sherry and a few other songs. These were kids. These were 8 and 12-year-old boys, two of them, that when I've seen them on television years and years and years ago playing live on some late night show, sitting there crying, watching these boys going, my God, these two boys, one on the piano, one on the drums, both are singing their butts off in harmony, playing live. And I'm thinking to myself, where is this talent today?
It's
incredible.
I wonder if the industry has actually, Tom, you had a studio, didn't you?
Yeah. I did a number of years ago, and, the music industry has changed a lot from the 70s and 80s, and I think the attitudes also have changed. A lot of the young people that were coming into the studio had kind of an attitude problem for the most part.
You think they had dreams?
Yeah, dreams, but also, you know, they were in pretty much fantasy land a lot of times, because they would come in with their ideas of what they wanted to do, but unfortunately, if you gave them any criticism, they would give you attitude. You know,
it's
a funny industry.
It is hard when you're an artist, and I've been on that side of the fence where I've gone in with a song and some big guy looked down his glasses at me down his nose at me and said, "Well, we've got to change this around, and we can't have that word in twice, and we're gonna get somebody else in to play the keyboards." And I'm like, "Well, geez, I mean, then it stops being, it's not me anymore."
Right.
I've been on both sides, you know, but I don't know. I have a lot of problems with the music the kids listen to today. My kids don't. They luckily have gone to the good music. They listen to, you know, I try to provide them with the better, the older music so that they get that grassroots in their system. And then if they want to listen to rap, they can. But it's thin pickings out there right now as far as good music goes.
Yeah. I think what Tom was talking about was they have images in their head of stardom.
Yes.
And they haven't even stepped into the studio yet.
Yeah.
And they
look at individuals like 50 Cent and, you know, some of these fellas that, you know, came from sort of obscure backgrounds and, you know, made it big. But of course, you know, how often does that happen? You know, so
and a lot of times too, the Justin Biebers of the world are henpecked at a very, very early age.
Oh God, don't get me started.
and honed for years and years and years with the parents being in the industry, so they know this is what's going to happen.
Right.
Yes, Scott, you know a little bit about that.
I know. I mean, I'll tell you a story. They tried to come at this, at least from what I hear, they tried to come at it from a grassroots, the miracle stardom thing. But it was all engineered. I think the father even made some comments to that effect. There's a video of him on, you know, beating on a chair going, "My name's Justin Bieber and I'm going to be a drummer when I grow up." You know, all stage stuff put out on different time scales to make it look like, oh, see, anybody can do this. It's just a matter of, you know, persevering and then sing songs that that 12-year-old girls will go ooh and ah over. I mean, that's the sort of stuff you got to deal with nowadays in the industry.
Well, it's about money. And unfortunately, you know, I think that, you know, for one thing, music is, it's not a man-made thing. music is universal. I believe that any planet in this universe that has a civilization on it has music. And it probably works the same way our music does. There's a lot of math behind how music works and why certain notes work with other notes and certain notes don't. And why harmonies work in some cases and why they don't. All that stuff is all got to do with math and the way we interpret it. So it's not something that we invented, you know, as we were slaving in fields one day and somebody started beating a drum and we all started singing. It goes back way, way further than that, even before there was ever life here on this planet. And so it's natural and it's an art. Now, some people are born with the ability to create the music and write the lyrics and so on. And that's like a painter, you know, it's an art. Now, unfortunately, I think what's happened is that this God-given gift has been taken from us and sold back to us by an industry in a way that they want us to receive
it. Right.
There's lots of great music out there. The problem is that there's no money in it.
Right.
So you may have this really ugly guy with, you know, with big glasses and, you know, big ears and so on. Beautiful singer, great keyboard player, great musician, songwriter, whatnot. But he's not going to, as you said, the 12-year-old girls aren't going to scream and yell when he gets on stage. So there's no money in that. So again, video killed the radio star. I mean, that's absolutely true. And it's turned into just a real candy bar industry.
Geez, thanks, Craig. Now I got video killed the radio star in my head. video killed them. I hear what you're saying, and I feel strongly about that as well. I mean, there's definitely, it's like they've taken filet mignon, turned it into dog food, and fed it back to us.
Yeah, and the other thing too is that they don't want you to have a CD in your hands or an MP3 thing in your player that you're going to listen to over and over and over and over and over again for years, like we used to when things like Supertramp, Breakfast in America came out, or when Led Zeppelin 4 came out, or when I keep bringing up the same groups, I do have my favorites, when Let It Be by the Beatles came out or whatever. These records are still being played today. The record, if you create a product and you sell that product to a population, do you want that product to hang around long enough that those people aren't going to need to buy more products off of you?
Right.
The music that they're putting out is quite possibly purposely manufactured so that people get bored of it real quick, so they'll go back and buy more.
Right. Well, that brings up a whole other subject about charging for creativity.
Well, I understand that the artists have to, if they're going to spend their life doing it, they have to make money. But what a lot of people don't understand is that they say, well, when you steal the music, you're robbing from the artists. The artists don't make a hell of a lot of money from the purchase of their music. They make the money when the songs are played on the radio. And if the songs are if people are familiar with the songs, if they've heard the songs, whether they downloaded them from a BitTorrent or whether they stole them from somebody's, you know, MP3 player, it doesn't matter. That music is seeing more ears than it normally would. And if that music is played on the radio more often, then the artist will make money off of in other words, the artist makes the money off the radio play, not the sale of the song.
Right.
And even then, I think it's only 40% of the profits is what the artist gets to take home when that song is played on the radio. The record industry takes the other chunk.
Yeah. They take a pretty big chunk, too.
You really aren't robbing from the artists when you steal a song from wherever. You're robbing from the record companies, who have been robbing us for decades.
Right. Yep.
But anyway, I better shut up now because
there goes your career. Oh well. there's a bunch of people listening going, "Oh, I'm going to get that guy, sign him up." Now they're going, "Ah, no."
Not interested.
Okay. Wow. Beer. If anybody wants to call in, we're actually over our time, but that's just cuz we're yammering. I told you we wouldn't have any trouble filling up the time.
No, we've done well. We've
Yeah.
Out quite well. A couple of great callers. And I wanted to also point out that out of the four people, I mean, there hasn't been that many people. There's three people called in and one person sent a message. Three of those people were female. Am I correct?
Yes.
There was,
yep, yeah, right on.
There was, yeah, three were female and one was male. So there goes my whole beer is a male oriented.
Yeah, yeah, there goes the testosterone right out the window there.
Exactly.
Unbelievable. Okay, well, what do you think, Tom? Should we just wrap it up? We're over time by 50 minutes just because we're yammering. Okay, well, let's just yap it up. Great. I want to thank Craig for coming on tonight and answering questions and just being who he is.
Well, thank you very much for having me, guys. It was a lot of fun. Really, I really appreciate the time.
Definitely. And I wanted to expose more people to your music because I'm a big fan. I listen to every song you have and repeatedly over and over. Now that's something I wanted to, I actually think I mentioned this to you once before, but you should definitely be playing songs like that on Justin TV. Now that you got your Justin TV channel.
I do. Yeah. I usually somebody will say in the chat room, "Hey, what about one of your own tunes?" And so I'll play it. I mean,
okay.
I don't like to push it too much, but,
hey, it's good stuff. You should, you know, hopefully won't be hearing any Jay-Z on your channel.
Well, as long as people go to my YouTube channel, which is youtube.com/CraigTube, and subscribe and watch my videos, learn how to make beer and wine and all kinds of other stuff, and we'll see you there.
Oh, great. Right.
Well, okay. Hopefully we'll do it again.
Next week, we got a physicist from Toronto named Stoyan Sark. And he's going to be talking about UFO propulsion systems. He's done some lab experiments where he's generated movement that is anti-gravity, but yet he doesn't call it anti-gravity, does he, Tom? What does he call it? He calls it inverse gravity?
Yeah. Well, he'll explain all that next week. So hopefully people will tune in and listen to that. Very interesting and exciting talk.
Really smart guy. He's got how many books? Three books available? We're going to have them
up.
Three books. We're going to have the books up available on our website in the store section. All of Stoyan Sarg's books will be there and available. And we'll give you a list of those next week. You can just log on and check them out in the www.spectrumradionetwork.com. And click on the store button, you'll be able to see all that. Okay, we'll see you guys next week.
AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com is your gateway to over 500 products ranging from herbs to pain relief products, health and well-being. AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com is dedicated to educating and empowering you to make the best possible informed decisions about what products you can use to improve your health and well-being. Visit AlternativeLifestyleProducts.com and bring about change in your life.